Okay, well, today's miracles starts in, well, they're here the, we're going to look, I think, mostly at Mark chapter 5. Thinking through, we're looking at all the miracles that Jesus performed. I've been reading them in all of the Gospels. I have come to the conclusion that the book of Mark describes these kind of things in greater detail, using more words than the other Gospels. I would not have thought that prior to at least the examples, some of the examples I've looked at. Mark chapter 5, starting in verse 1. This is the demon-possessed man and the herd of pigs. It's also found in Matthew chapter 8 and Luke chapter 8. We've read from all three of the Gospels on other ones, but this is a rather long account, so I'm going to try to combine them, concentrating on what is recorded in Mark, because that has, it appears, the most complete, or at least he uses the most words to describe what happened. Luke, last week, Jesus and his disciples got into the boat and sailed across the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus fell asleep, and the storm came up, and they woke Jesus up, and he calmed the storm. This is as they reach the other side of the lake, of the Sea of Galilee. Mark chapter 1, or chapter 5, starting in verse 1. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. If we read in Matthew, it says Gadarenes. There's some question about exactly what word should be there. Apparently, talk more about that later anyway. And when Jesus stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. Luke includes that the man was from the city, but he had an unclean spirit, Mark writes, and Luke says he had demons. Now, at this point, Matthew is interesting because he records that there were two demon-possessed men who met Jesus coming out of the tombs. Luke continues his description. For a long time, this is in Luke, he had worn no clothes. He had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. For many a time, the demons had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. Then picking back up in the book of Mark, he lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. Matthew adds that he was so fierce, or they, there were two of them in Matthew's account, were so fierce that no one could pass that way. Then back in Mark, and when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." Matthew records, "What have you to do with us, O Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Back in Mark, "For he was saying to him," Jesus was saying to this man, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Luke then continues with, "For many demons had entered him. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country." Luke describes that as they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now a great herd of pigs, or a large herd of pigs, was feeding on the hillside. At some distance, Matthew adds to this. And they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. Jesus said to them, "Go," is what Matthew records. And the unclean spirits, or demons, came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country. Matthew adds especially what had happened to the demon-possessed men. And people came out to see what it was that had happened, and they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, from whom the demons had gone, Luke adds, sitting there. Luke describes it sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they, the people of the surrounding country, began to beg Jesus to depart from their region, Luke adds, for they were seized with fear. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. Okay, so I've kind of mixed all three accounts confusingly into one account, more or less. They sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. Gerasa was the closest town to this event, apparently. It's close to the Sea of Galilee, on the eastern shore, which is the Gentile side of the sea, or the lake. Gadara is a different town. It appears to be the more significant town in the region, and the region is thus known, described by Matthew as the region of the region of the Gadarenes, or the Decapolis, as it's recorded in Mark. There's questions about which word, either the Gerasenes or the Gadarenes, should be. There's some confusion in the text about which is the proper place or the proper word. It seems that Mark and Luke describe the region by the closest town, and Matthew perhaps by the most significant town in the region, which is some distance away, but still the region is known by that name. But in any case, or in either case, Jesus has crossed the lake into Gentile territory. So now he's going to be dealing with Gentiles. There met him a man with an unclean spirit. Matthew reads two demon-possessed men. Now, strictly speaking, this wouldn't be a contradiction, because both statements can be true. If there were two men there, Jesus certainly met a man. In fact, he met two men, according to Matthew. And perhaps one of these men was a bit louder, stronger, or more prominent, or more famous. In Mark and Luke, he's the one that's mentioned, and the other one kind of sets off in the background. But there's certainly the one that Jesus seemed to deal with primarily. This man, according to Luke, was from the city, so he had apparently lived in the town of Gerasa, but was such trouble that they tried to restrain him without success. He would break out of the shackles, and finally he was driven by the demon, it says, into the desert, and he lived among the tombs. And the townspeople were no doubt relieved that he had isolated himself in that way. They were happy to see him gone, no doubt. No one could bind him. He wrenched the chains apart. Now, it is our common belief that being possessed by a demon would perhaps give someone, the demon would cause you to have superhuman strength. But does the passage say that this unfortunate man had superhuman strength because he was demon-possessed? I read through it a couple of times, and I don't see that it explicitly says that. It does say that they were unable to control this guy. And it does say that he was strong enough to wrench their chains and to break the shackles. Now, I don't know how strong their chains and shackles were.
Mark.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's you can go on YouTube and you can see police videos where it takes seven big policemen to try to restrain some guy who's beaked up on meth or something. And the guys are just, and they're throwing the cops off left and right.
And
yeah, it's... Yeah, the how much strength you can exhibit is limited by how much pain you're willing to endure. And if somebody's on some kind of drug, they are often willing to endure a lot more pain than the cops who are protecting themselves are willing to endure. So I don't know. Maybe the demon in kept him from. He just wasn't concerned about the pain that would be inflicted. So I don't know. So, but the common belief is that the demon himself will give somebody superhuman strength. So I saw this on this is from Wikipedia, so it's got to be true. They would never lie about this. According to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, signs of demonic possession include Catholic Church has official exorcists. I'm sure there's one in Lubbock. We have a bishop in Lubbock, so I'm sure that he can give you the number. I met the bishop of Lubbock one time. I went to a party and he was there. Oh, really? Seemed like a nice man. I didn't really shake his hand or anything, but anyway. So, according to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, signs of demonic possession include manifestations of superhuman strength. So, that's what the Catholic bishops consider. The second is blasphemous rage, obscene hand gestures, using profanity, and aversion to holy symbols, relics, or holy water. Now, If you're counting obscene hand gestures and profanity, I think I went to junior high with some guys who were demon-possessed. So
they're still there.
Or is it all seventh graders, maybe? So, yes. Yeah.
The activity in the brain is what is just.
Yeah, so.
It's a problem. It is.
So I don't know. I'm willing to. Certainly, because this guy was demon possessed, he was just unconcerned about pain caused to himself or other people. Maybe that's why he could He could break the chains. I don't know. There's two other signs. One of them, and I don't know what to make of this, one of them is speaking in tongues or languages that the victim cannot know. According to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, that's a sign of demon possession. But right down the street, there are Catholic charismatics who are speaking in tongues with the permission of the bishop and the endorsement of the bishop. So which way is it? Is it something that the bishop approves of, or is it something the bishop says is a sign of demon possession? I'm confused. So I don't know. And the fourth sign of demon possession, revelation of knowledge, distant or hidden, that the victim cannot know. And again, the bishop over here, if you do that, the bishop says you're demon possessed. Right down the street, if you do that, the bishop says you've got the gift of the Holy Spirit. I'm not sure. I'm confused. I guess I'll have to take that up with somebody else. So I don't know the answer to that. Anyway, nobody could bind this man. He wrenched the chains apart. Now, other examples we read of demon possession, they would throw the young boy into the fire or into the water. So there was a lot of involuntary motion involved with that as well. The common understanding would be that the being possessed by a demon could give you super abnormal strength. It doesn't strictly say that in so many words, but it is associated with somebody exhibiting a great deal of strength. He was always crying out and cutting himself with stones, Mark writes. He was harming himself the most. And Matthew adds, so fierce that no one could pass that way. Certainly travelers were afraid of this guy, or these two guys in Matthew. And they were staying away from them as well they could. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. Now the demon-possessed man did not run away from Jesus, he ran toward Jesus. And he wasn't violent with Jesus or attacked Jesus or blasphemous or rude or there's a lot of yelling going on perhaps, but he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, son of the Most High? I adjure you or I beg you by God, do not torment me. And then Matthew adds, have you come here to torment us before the time? In the New Testament, people who are possessed of demons, they recognize who Jesus is, and they may be loud about it, but they truthfully confess who Jesus is. Jesus might tell them to be quiet after that, but still, they're not cursing or blasphemous. They're relatively polite, although rowdy. Now these demons, they were in opposition. They knew that Jesus was in opposition to them, and he was there perhaps to torment them. Do not torment me, he says, or have you come here to torment us before the time? So is there a time where they expected to be tormented by Jesus or opposed by Jesus, but they didn't think this would be the good time and they were trying to postpone it? I don't know.
Interesting that he invokes God.
Yes. Oh, he begs him by God. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah. I beg you by God, do not torment me. So he's appealing to God, or appealing to Jesus, by God not to torment me. Yeah. For he was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. So maybe this is the first part of the tormenting would be getting him to come out of the man. Jesus then asked, what is your name? Now, I don't know that there's any significance in knowing a demon's name, or if he was Jesus was just doing this so everybody in the crowd would know who and what he was dealing with. And the demon gives him a name. He gives him the name Legion, which it the Legion is the biggest unit of a Roman of the Roman army. Is that a division these days? Or an army?
In the Air Force, they didn't have that kind of talk. That would be an army division.
Yeah.
6,000 men.
Yes, yeah. So that's in the Roman army, a legion had 3,000 to 6,000 infantry, then cavalry on top of that. Cavalry is a hill. Cavalry is people on horseback. So, but I don't think we should expect the demon to be using the word legion to indicate that they were 3,000 to 6,000 demons. I can't remember which gospel it is, says, my name is Legion, for we are many. He indicates that there are many demons involved. Now, Jesus, we've already seen an example of Mary Magdalene, who had 7 demons cast out of her. Jesus describes in Matthew chapter 12 that when an unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest but finds none. And then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. When it comes, he finds the house empty, swept, and put in order. Then it goes and brings in 7 other spirits more evil than itself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of the person is worse than the first. So that would be the original plus 7 more. That's a total of 8, I suppose, that Jesus said would could take up residence in a clean, swept house.
Well, I wonder if there were 2,000 pigs.
There were 2,000. Is it a demon per pig?
Or was it the pigs and the herd mentality?
I don't know. So, more, there were, and, you know, but point, I guess the guy's saying there's so many here, you know, more than you can number, or more than, it's a lot. I don't think 3,000, well, obviously 3,000 to 6,000 isn't a specific number anyway. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. And Matthew says, they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. The abyss is a bottomless pit, a deep hole. Let's see, we have this reference in Luke chapter 8. And then there is a reference in Revelation. Then in 2 Peter, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, Peter writes, if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into Tartarus, it's often translated hell, but it is a specific word for hell called Tartarus, and that's the only place it's used in the New Testament, and committed them to chains of gloomy darkness to be kept until judgment. Then he goes on with the sentence, but it indicates that God has put angels who sinned into a place called Tartarus, which is often identified with this abyss or bottomless pit. In Revelation, there is another reference to the bottomless pit and the king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name is Abaddon, in Greek Apollyon. So, putting all the, now this is kind of a conclusion one may draw from what is said about bottomless pits, but that this would be the place where angels who sinned are kept awaiting judgment, and then demons are kept awaiting judgment as well. Now, how these, if these had ever previously been in the bottomless pit and are now out, and then Jesus is putting them back, is that what's happening? Perhaps. But they don't want to go into the bottomless pit. The demons themselves, they ask, there's a herd of pigs feeding nearby on a hillside. Matthew says at some distance from them, and they ask, they beg Jesus, send us to the pigs. Now, I don't know what it is would be about demons that they would prefer to be in pigs than bottomless pits. Maybe that's preferable. And it's also, we kept pigs in a pen. We didn't keep pigs on the hillsides in pastures. I don't know. Maybe they raised pigs. I didn't have 2,000. That's true. It is. That's true. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And they had concrete troughs of water for them to lay in so they could cool off. They were huge. And they were
I guess it can be done. That's just different.
You mentioned something about the pigs like the water. They come out of the water, they don't like the dry.
Well, they will wallow in mud if you give them the opportunity.
I meant the demons.
Oh, really?
About water and dry.
They prefer the water to the dry? Yeah, Jesus, an unclean spirit has gone out. It passes through waterless places seeking to rest but finds none. So it finds no rest in a waterless place. I guess that's, I don't know. I do not know.
I always thought they liked to inhabit a body.
Yeah, that's, and if you can't, if they're leaving the body of a person, the body of a pig would be, you know. I don't know.
Is there a difference between a pig and a swine?
Yeah. No, there's no difference. Swine and pig is, this is an English thing. The wild pigs? Oh, those are a nuisance. Because you hit them with your car and it'll mess up your car forever. Yeah. Yeah, and they're wild. Yeah. Shooting pigs? Yeah, they're a nuisance. Yeah.
Harley's sister lives in Conroe. Edge of Conroe. And she was telling us last night the wild pigs are digging up her property.
Yeah.
She said, after you make sure you don't go out there. And she said, well, they don't do it during the day. It's at night.
Yeah. Oh.
And she said, they're just making havoc of my
property. Yeah. And they have a pretty high reproduction rate. 3 months, 3 days, 3 weeks, and 3 days. I learned this in vocational agriculture. That's the gestation period for a pig. 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days.
So them and the rabbits must be
healthy. Yeah, they have litters of 8 or 10 or 12, and it's a mess. I don't know. Who knows? And again, we've talked about demon possession and other miracles. There is no clear teaching about what demons are and what they do. You kind of have, you get little hints from these little case studies, and then you go and listen to the Catholic bishops and you get a different picture altogether. So who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
You know, we have it now. I mean, we're controlling it. But did they have any means of controlling it?
Like rabies, that kind of thing? I don't know. For some reason, the demons would rather go into the pigs than into the hole, the bottomless pit. So Jesus says, "Go." He gave them permission. Now the demons don't do things that they follow Jesus' orders, and they ask him permission to do things. So there you go. The unclean spirits or the demons came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. Now, we have in our minds like they jumped off the cliff like a bunch of lemmings. Why do lemmings do that? I don't know. But it's more described here that the hill, the bank of the hill was relatively steep down into the sea. But the pigs, they run into the water and drown. Now, I don't know, is this the demons that it's making? I don't know why the demons would be so happy to go into the pigs just to then make them run into the water. Or was it the pigs that would rather drown than be inhabited by a demon? I don't know. So I don't know who was acting there. I don't think it was Jesus, though. I don't think Jesus drove the pigs into the water. It was he just gave the demons permission to enter the pigs. It's a mystery. There are apparently, yes.
Satan is an angel. He's a fallen angel.
That's
Well,
that's one theory. The Bible doesn't tell us where Satan came from, but one theory is that he's a fallen angel. Either way, he's one of. I don't know why the pigs should do this. I got no reason.
It just.
I don't know. But the herdsmen, the guys that are tending the pigs, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. And Matthew adds especially what had happened to the demon-possessed men. So, you know, sure, their whole herd has run into the water and drowned. But that they're telling people more, especially what had happened to these two demon-possessed men in Matthew. You'd think... Now, the people, the herdsmen tending the pigs, they were probably hired hands that, they're going to be in trouble maybe for letting the pigs get away from them, but how are they going to stop 2,000 pigs that are running into the water? You ever try to herd pigs? We did that a little bit back in vocational agriculture. What's that? They will bite you? Yeah, I've heard that. That wasn't our experience in vocational agriculture. I was never frightened of the pigs.
My mother had a huge scar on her.
Maybe the domestic pigs are like the Chester Whites and the Hampshires are more docile than the wild boars. So,
and
it's a good question. What is the lesson that was meant for us to draw from the pigs running into the water? I don't know. Maybe pigs are they preferred that to being host to a demon. I don't know. It doesn't describe what happened to the demons after the pigs drowned. Are they now are they in the bottomless pit? Did they just take a bunch of pigs along with the ride? I don't know. See, I got more questions than I got answers. I'm sorry. So